back to Cairo Nights. Driven to Tears. Police. It is 6 minutes after 9 o'clock. Interesting choice. You ever heard of shameware?
Well, I have, because we talked about this before the show, but I had previously not. Not to shatter anyone's illusion.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's not all spontaneous.
Yeah. If you folks haven't heard of shameware, it's literally a kind of a spyware app that people are voluntarily installing on their phones. It's an anti-pornography app, and this is a story from a church in a Southern Baptist church called Grace Point, and they're asking new congregation members, when they join this church, to voluntarily put an app called Covenant Eyes on their phone. And what Covenant Eyes does is it will take a screenshot of your phone's activity every minute, once a minute. And if they find at Covenant Eyes, that's the app, and more specifically the Grace Point Southern Baptist Church, finds that you are doing something that you shouldn't be doing, that's against the church's beliefs, they will report your activity to your accountability partner. If you can't be trusted to live by the guidelines that this church believes in, and you as a voluntary member of the congregation of this church believe in, they will be the spine you just don't have, or the self-control you lack.
Can we sign Lindsey Graham up for this? He needs someone to give him a spine.
Oh, my gosh. Write this down. What a phenomenal idea. It's called shameware. Covenant Eyes isn't the only app that does this. There's Accountable to You, also an app. Accountable to You that's used to monitor users' porn habits. Apparently, the phone has become the number one distribution vehicle, delivery platform for pornography on your phone. And, you know, if you are in a relationship with another person or with your church that deems this to be a behavior that's unhealthy, unacceptable, unwelcome, unwanted, then these are the apps for you. The problem is that according to a University of California study, a researcher named Nicole Prowse from UCLA told Wired Magazine with regard to these apps, "I've never seen anyone who's been on one of these apps feel better about themselves in the long term. These people just end up feeling like there's something wrong with them, when the reality is there isn't anything wrong with them. What's wrong is," and this that was the end of her quote, "what's wrong, in my opinion, is that your choice of religions or your choice of congregations with which to join."
Well, but there are secular arguments for why certain people are prone to compulsive behaviors that are unhealthy. And for a person who has a compulsive bent towards this, mm-hmm. even apart from religion, maybe they just really don't want to be bogged down by that.
I'm not following your point.
Well, pornography addiction.
Yes.
I'm saying that some people with compulsive personalities can overindulge. It can affect their relationships and their workplace and things of that. Like that.
Fair enough. And that point, you're exactly right. I get you. Thank you for helping me see that side of it. Because maybe I'm lucky that pornography has never been an issue for me. I'm aware.
You're not a Supreme Court justice, but you know it when you see it.
I'm not an enthusiast. I'll say that. I think pornography has a healthy place in a healthy relationship. But I think it raises unrealistic expectations. It promotes unhealthy stereotypes with regard to role play or you know, a domination, or, you know, there's some very unhealthy things about, you know, what pornography offers. And that's, of course, because that's a supply and demand. That's a market issue, because there are people whose tastes require, you know, various oddities, extreme, you know, habits, patterns, tendencies, whatever it might be. Plus, you know, the idea that you can actually get a plumber to your house that fast, you know, the way it's portrayed in porn, is it portrays an unrealistic expectation with folks. That and a pizza, you know? You can never get a pizza at your house. Anyway, I make a joke. But the fact that these apps will monitor your phone once a minute, you know, and Wired Magazine did a story on this, and it wasn't about how healthy is porn. It wasn't about how onerous does your religion, you know, need to be over your life. It was more about accessibility permissions and how these apps are violating their promise to you and using your information, monitoring your surveilling your information beyond what their guidelines say they should be. In fact, the apps I mentioned, Covenant Eyes and Accountable to You, were both removed from Google's App Store because of the findings of the Wired Magazine report. Both these apps apparently are still available on iOS, but they were taken down from the Google Play Store because they were the information that they were gathering was being used for reasons beyond what their descriptions had told folks.
I can think of ways this could be abused beyond, you know, just the aspect of whether or not you want to trust someone to monitor what you feel is a bad habit.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
What if it could be used, for example, in a case of blackmail? You trust the wrong person, they get some information on you, and it might not be pornography. It could be, I don't know what else this thing wiretaps, in essence. So they could get information on you, find out something personal about you, your life, your family, what have you. There's a myriad of reasons why this could be insecure in the wrong hands.
Oh, absolutely. Issues of fidelity, issues of work.
You could blackmail someone.
Non-disclosure with your work information, professional, whatever it might be. Yeah, there's lots of ways. Anytime your information is out there in the ether sphere, you're subjected to all kind of stuff. You know, identity theft 101. This seems to be the biggest, you know, slippery slope of apps like this. You know, finding out our information. They're taking screenshots of your phone once a minute. Who knows when randomly your passwords or your whatever may be subjected and stolen. I mean, and if you've got that kind of access to my phone to take a screenshot every minute and send it to my accountability partner, you've got everything about me.
What if you could see emails or account numbers,
right,
or people's
right.
log into their banks, their credit
exactly.
cards, any
exactly.
number of serious.
You know, identity theft is already the number one cybercrime in America, if not the world. You know, these apps can't possibly do anything but exacerbate that problem, pour gasoline on that fire. I mean, for me, it struck that, you know, folks had to have an accountability partner was the part of the story that first caught my attention and my concern. You know, I mean, if you've got a relationship with somebody and you aren't being honest enough with them to just, you know, be your true self, you have to have a phone app that's lets your accountability partner know when you're not being true.
But let's take this from another angle. Let's say the problem isn't pornography. Let's say
right.
it's drug addiction.
Right.
Alcoholism. Okay, your partner can't be your therapist or your cure for your problem.
That's true.
It doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't be in the relationship, but other people or other systems can help you deal with that issue. Accountability, meetings,
That's
friends.
Good. Yeah, yeah.
So I can understand the concept.
Yeah, and in that regard, I appreciate you bringing that up. In that regard, there's ways that apps like this could be insanely helpful. You know, anytime you are in a place, you know, if your GPS is a place where you're not supposed to be. You know, it's funny, we have kids, teenagers, one now is a teenager, and the other one's a grown adult, so it's not really an issue anymore. Now what my grown adult does, I don't want to know. Believe me, as a dad of a young woman, I don't want to know. We have that Where's My iPhone app. And we don't monitor where my child goes by way of the Where's My iPhone app. But we could, and the fact that we could, and my daughter knows that we could, be monitoring her every move and every location she's at, I think is, you know, that's all. If you think you're being watched, you probably will act a little more accordingly to the guidelines, to the rules. We found that to be true in every situation. We had a story last week, you know, about folks who thought they were being watched didn't steal as much. That story about the grocery store with the self-check apps or the self-checkout apps, those kind of things. You know, folks who think they're being monitored, you know, a lot of stores have cameras with no film in them or whatever, a digital camera surveillance that's not even hooked up. But the thought that you look up there and see a camera and eye in the sky, you think you're being watched, you're going to be a little more responsible than if you weren't being watched at all. Same thing with a phone, information of location and whatnot, who you talk to, what apps you go to, what websites you go to. I know parents that record every stroke their kid's computer makes, every digit their phone types in, every text message their kid sends. I know parents that have had to resort to that kind of extreme surveillance on their kid because their kids had shown poor judgment. Their kids had gotten into social media trouble or, you know, texting trouble because they're your kids. You're supposed to make mistakes. You're supposed to show poor judgment. Learn from those mistakes and grow up.
And you're supposed to grow your IT skills by learning how to circumvent filters like we did in the old days. That's how it works.
Yeah, that is how it works. But as a parent, you worry. We've talked before about how it's a different world than you or I grew up in. It's a much more dangerous world than you and I grew up in. You know, it used to be if there was a creepy guy in your neighborhood, you know, your kids realized it and recognized somebody that didn't belong, didn't seem... You know, that's when I was growing up. If there was somebody in your neighborhood that was out of place, that was something that could be pretty easily spotted.
And for developing minds, and speaking of age appropriateness, it's not your dad's Playboy that you found, you know, back in the day under the bed or in
right.
the drawer.
Right.
Like the stuff that's available on the internet is very adult, so it's a reasonable concern to not expose people to that.
Yes, exactly right.
Too early.
And like we mentioned before, too. There are different tastes, fetishes, needs for folks. And in some regards, those can be healthy and extreme and exotic. But in a lot of cases, they're just dangerous.
You have the maturity.
Yes, exactly.
And you
exactly.
also have the exactly. informed consent, the understanding
right.
of things like that far before.
That it's
you
not reality.
That type of material would be
right.
ideal.
Right. But when you're a young person who's forming your patterns and your opinions and your... You know, your guidelines for life, those can be deadly dangerous, you know, not just from a physical danger perspective, but from a development perspective, you know. So here's to you, Grace Point Church, for, you know, locking that down, man. Shameware, you know,
And I suppose, too, in a religious context, if you do have a faith tradition where that's wrong, and even if you maybe personally don't feel the same way about it, if you care about your marriage and your spouse and that's a hard limit for them, then maybe you do want to make the decision to try and be accountable and abstain for that reason, which is fair.
Yeah, that is. That's not unreasonable at all. Just seems like, you know, there's so many ways we are surveilled. In this world, you know, I mean, everything we do, you know, people, paranoid conspiracy types talk about a digital paperless, you know, monetary system, a paperless commerce system gives people the ability to shut everything off and control our lives. I'm not a believer in that kind of conspiracy, that kind of overarching conspiracy. I know I'll get texters who are, maybe not, paranoid's a strong word, maybe the wrong word. But if you're a believer that, you know, if you do all your banking digitally, if you do all your commerce and transactions digitally, somebody knows too much about you and how much money you have and where you spend your money. And I mean, I guess there's truth in that. There's reason for concern in that.
I guess the upside to this, in theory, is that it's voluntary.
Yes, it is.
But you have to worry not only about the person you're trusting, which is a pretty big trust, but also the flaws in the software, which appear to be, you know, there appear to be some leaks in this particular boat.
Right. A texter points out, wait till someone hacks this. makes it a video record. You talk about blackmailing someone.
Be great stuff to have on Politicians.
Again, you mentioned Lindsey Graham. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah.
You know, but hey, you know, and I don't want to get, we haven't mentioned his name all night, but there's a certain former president that doesn't, you know, he tweets a lot, or used to. He truths a lot, but doesn't send any emails, you know, doesn't send any text records. There's no way to lock that guy down on information. Well, you got to see a level of genius in that kind of a, you know, paranoia.
Yeah, when it comes to surveillance, though, I always say that I'm not that interesting, and even my search history isn't that interesting.
Come on. Yeah, I'm sure there's some embarrassing stuff. Come on, share. Come on. Come on. I'm kidding, brother. I'm kidding. Turn your mic off.
You want to keep your show,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, turn your mic off. a texter, I want to thank you very much, Rolling Rock. Rolling Rock Sox says, let's merge these two topics. Shameware, don't bring your whole self to church. Through that. You know, boy, I think that's, you know, if, here's the thing, you know, if you are lying to your congregation, your minister, the church itself, the congregation you've become a part of, if you can't be honest with that group of people, if you can't be honest with your partner from a religious perspective, trust me, nothing an app's going to find out and bust you on. No accountability partner is going to matter, because if you're a religious person, person of faith, there's somebody watching all the time that doesn't need an app. And your accountability partner is going to be manning the gates. And that's when it's going to matter. That's the only time it's going to matter.
Another factor to this is, you know, conversely, maybe you're thinking, you're going, I would love to be in a relationship with somebody I could show that list to, and they'd be like, that's cool. Love at first history browse.
Yeah, well, you
that's
know,
what I'm looking
boy,
for.
You want full disclosure on your first date, bring up your search history, no
hey,
kidding.
Hey, it's a good icebreaker. Yeah, and if they stick around,
yeah, then
maybe
you've won. You've hit the jackpot.
Bingo.
A texter points out, a Baptist church I went to years ago had the predecessor to what you are talking about. They wanted to know your checking status, food you bought, who your friends are, music, and so on and on and on. Boy, I guess if you're in charge of protecting a flock, as they say, you want to know where the wolves are. Seems a fair ask.
Just be careful you don't get shorn in the process.
Amen. You see the kind we're doing here? That's good. Well, thanks for joining us, Cairo Knights. We've got a couple breaks left to share with you. We'll be back after these. I'm Spike O'Neill. That's Matt Butler. We're glad you're here at Cairo Knights. Welcome back to Cairo Knights, 9:33. I'm Spike O'Neill. Matt Butler's on the board. So there was a conviction in a drug case, and it was overturned in court on appeal. And why? I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about this. Let me know how you feel. Finding a Snohomish County deputy prosecutor appealed race-based suggestion rather than evidence, the State Court of Appeals on Monday overturned an Everett man's conviction for felony drug distribution. The appeals judge ruled the use of the phrase Mexican ounce to refer to heroin quantities in a trial of Jesus Ibarra Erivez, 42, improperly undermined the presumption of innocence. This was back in June of 2018. Detectives from the Snohomish County Regional Drug Task Force seized heroin and methamphetamine from an apartment south of Everett. 3 years later, Ibarra Erivez faced trial for the seized drugs. At the trial, the Snohomish County Superior Court, Ibarra Erivez, who was identified as Latinx in court documents, Latinx, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, used a Spanish interpreter, according to appeals ruling. During the testimony, Deputy Prosecutor Adam Sturdivant questioned the investigator's lead detective about the amount of drugs found. For heroin, he explained, 25 grams is considered an ounce. The deputy prosecutor asked why. I don't know what the answer is, but the term on the street is, it's a Mexican ounce across the board, regardless of who is selling or buying a 25 gram of a Mexican ounce. In a closing argument, Sturdivant reused the phrase twice, referring to heroin packaged as a Mexican ounce, according to the ruling. Reached by a Daily Herald reporter Monday, Sturdivant declined to comment. In a statement Monday, Chief Criminal Deputy Prosecutor Matt Baldock, wrote that the argument was not an appeal to bias. The argument was not an appeal to bias. Instead, he referenced a street term that was testified to by a task force detective and made an argument that was based on the facts and consistent with the law at the time. Prosecutors argued the phrase was relevant because it was probative of the fact that a 25 grams of heroin, despite not being an ounce, is a sufficiently common amount for sale and has its own terminology. A jury convicted Iverez of possession of a controlled substance with intent to manufacture or deliver. Superior Court Judge George Appel sentenced him to 16 months in prison. Iverez appealed his conviction, arguing the remarks suggested a Latinx person likely packaged the drugs. In an email Monday, Nancy Collins, an attorney for the State Appellate Court Project, who handled the appeal, argued the prosecution took advantage of a despicable stereotype to encourage a conviction. In 2011, the state Supreme Court ruled that not all appeals to racial prejudice are blatant. Not all appeals to racial prejudice are blatant. Perhaps more effective, but just as insidious are subtle references, the justices wrote, like wolves in sheep's clothing. A careful word here or there can trigger racial bias. And in recent years, the state's higher courts have tried to address systemic racism in the criminal justice system. For example, in June, the state Supreme Court ruled a prosecutor in Eastern Washington intentionally appealed to jurors' biases when he asked about questions about illegal immigration, the U.S. Border Patrol wall, and undocumented immigrants in a trial of a Latino man. Monday's ruling from the Court of Appeals repeatedly cites that opinion, known as State versus Zamora. That case extended the test for race-based misconduct to prosecutors. Beyond jury selection and police stops, the standard asked if an objective observer, aware of the history of race and ethnic discrimination in the United States and aware of implicit institutional and unconscious biases, in addition to purposeful discrimination, could view a prosecutor's remarks as appealing to prejudice. Following that precedent, Judge Bill Bowman ruled such an objective observer could view the prosecutor's use of the term as an apparent intentional appeal to jurors' potential biases. A suggestion that Iverez was more likely to have possessed drugs packed as a Mexican ounce because he speaks Spanish and appears to be Latinx. The ruling sends the case to Snohomish County Superior Court for another trial. In a statement, Iverez public defender Dustin Drengas applauded the decision. Mr. Iverez looks forward to an opportunity for a fair trial on the merits of the case, not one that is influenced by negative racial stereotypes. Appellate courts have said over and over that the use of race-based arguments in trial must stop. We hope Snohomish County Prosecutor's Offices will no longer tolerate the use of these stereotypes in prosecuting community members of color. Interesting case. I can understand the argument that we all have subconscious stereotypes, and certain phrases just trigger those, even at a subconscious level, in jurors. If the prosecution has a case strong enough that this gentleman was in possession of narcotics, methamphetamine, heroin, with the intent to sell and distribute or produce, then they shouldn't have to rely on biased terminology to help subconsciously swing the jury in their favor.
But is it, though, really? I mean, I understand about the questions about the immigration, the border. I get why those questions can be prejudicial. This is a street term. In drug culture and on the streets, there are a lot of terms that are offensive, are not necessarily what people in polite conversation would be saying.
Right.
But if that's how the customers refer to the drug itself and the amount, I don't see how that prejudices a juror.
Well, because these jurors aren't customers. on the street familiar with the vernacular of that community's dialects. These are just your average folks who are answering a summons to a jury, and they're in there, and they keep hearing the term Mexican ounce, which means in their subconscious minds, I could see the argument here. In their subconscious minds, he's Latin. He's speaking Spanish through an interpreter. Mexican ounce. That implies a guilt among that community.
I can see that, but it still feels like a far reach for most normal thinking people.
I would agree.
I don't think most people are going to think about it. The question is he guilty of possession of drugs or not? If the street term is whatever it is, I don't see your average sane juror getting unduly influenced by a street slang term. There's a lot of street slang in hip hop, and a lot of white people still listen to it.
Yeah,
if we threw out every conceivable term that was potentially offensive or prejudicial when it's being used in the context of a criminal case, which uses street verbiage that dealers and buyers use, I don't think that most people connect it to that and go, oh, well, because they use that word, he has to be guilty.
But what we're talking about, though, is the subconscious mind of these jurors and how certain words can trigger subconscious biases. And that was the argument made by the defense team and to the appellate court, and the appellate courts agreed. You know, and I hear what you're saying. But there have been cases where, criminal cases involving rap artists where your lyrics aren't even allowed to be used in court.
They're not allowed as evidence in
criminal
case.
Because there's a cultural acceptance of this type of terminology and these types of stories in a rap, hip-hop community's audience's community. But when you get a jury of your peers or a bunch of guys who weren't smart enough to get out of jury duty, then they're going to hear these terminology and have this preconceived prejudice.
Well, here's a takeaway. Maybe the problem is the juries don't adequately reflect enough the diversity. Maybe it's not really their peers. That sounds like part of the problem, too.
I would agree that that is a problem. I'm with you. But I think my initial reaction to this is what I'm going to kind of still not deviate from. If you've got a strong enough case that this guy was dealing heroin, and it doesn't matter whether it was 28 or 25 grams that made up this ounce and what that particular designation qualifies it for in street terminology, vernacular, you don't need to use those words that you as a prosecutor, you've done a lot of these trials, you know those words have power. You know those words may be able to sway just one or two jurors who were on the fence
now,
to getting you a guilty verdict.
Was it explained to the jurors the origins of this, like why this term was being used?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
It was. To your good credit. Good point. And it says in the story,
they were
given it was.
Context.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were. But the appellate court seemed to feel like it was enough of a subconscious attempt to sway these folks that a Hispanic man who speaks Spanish. And I use the term Latinx, and a texter says, please stop using that terminology.
It's a controversial term. A lot of Latinos don't like it.
I understand that to be the case, and I respect what you're saying, texter. I appreciate that. I'm quoting the story that we're telling this from. It's from the Everett Herald. So that's where we got the story. That's what the author of the story used to describe the gentleman in question and his case in court and why the appellate court feels he will get a new trial. He's not being let go free because this terminology was used. What the appellate court determined was that this may have unjustly and unsubconsciously influenced members of the jury to bring in a guilty verdict, and they're going to give him another trial.
Well,
without the use
the
of these terms.
Prosecutors will be editing their briefs before that one goes to court.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. It's Cairo Nights with Spike O'Neill. Matt Butler's on the board. I can't go for that. Nice call.
Indeed it is.
Nice choice. We'll be right back with your input for tonight's show. Texters have texted us their opinions on the various topics we've covered, and we'll bring you the best of those when we come right back. So please stay with us. Back. Tell me when did things go What is this?
These are the Smithereens.
Nice.
One of Jersey's finest bands.
Oh, yeah.
Along with the Fountains of Wayne and, of course, Bruce.
Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes.
You got it.
Going on and on. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. It is 9:51. I want to thank all of you for your input tonight. Covered a lot of topics, a lot of good input from you guys. We disagreed. We agreed. We respected each other, found common ground. A lot less name-calling than we got when we first started doing this, Matt, and I think that's progress. I do want to take a moment to acknowledge one of our listeners lost her mom, to Ben. Lost his mom, Edie Dightson, over the weekend. And Ben, I've lost my mom a few years back, and there's no greater loss, man. I'm so, so sorry to hear your loss.
Same here.
Keeping our thoughts, brother. Appreciate you being with us tonight. Boy, a listener texted in. We talked about what's going on in Iran, and the citizens of Iran, not just the women, but also the men, are protesting in the streets because the morality police took a woman into custody for improper wearing of a hijab, and she died in custody. Texter pointed out that we haven't passed the Equal Rights Act after 50 years, and our Supreme Court just told women don't have the right to body autonomy. We women again stand on the precipice. Good thing we are together than men, and no, good thing we are tougher than men. Excuse me. Good thing we're tougher than men and know how to play the long game. I hope you're right. That's Kip. Thanks, Kip. I hope you're right. I think you're right. Women do know how to play the long game. And I hope, and just like in Iran, it's not just women fighting for the right to individual liberties and body autonomy. I think that's something all Americans should be actively working toward. Talked about the hybrid of going to work and working from home and coming back to the office and not bringing your whole self to the office. Texter pointed out, professional image goes a long way. It really does. They always say dress for the job you want, not the job you have. And that's part of being able to climb the ladder of opportunity and success is, you know, doing the best job you can do.
Makes me wonder what the heck kind of job I'm dressing for.
Doorman at a really swanky club, I think, with that outfit.
Bartender at a tiki
lounge, yeah. We talked about shameware and how folks are downloading apps to make sure that if they do stray, and it's mostly used we cited out one particular church, and the use for pornography, and if you have an accountability partner. Someone said, wait till someone hacks this and uses it in the video record. Does this app work with DuckDuckGo? I don't know, man. Oh, the board guy plays great tunes. Yes, he does. Absolutely. Couldn't agree
with
you more.
Thank you from the board guy.
Yep, board guy does great work.
Board, not board.
We're talking about this last case about subconscious prejudice and Jones Thomas. Good God. No pun intended. If we're going to start critiquing the subconscious of jurors, we are doomed. Well, you know what? Everybody deserves a fair shake, man. And if you can not prejudice a jury and just go on the facts, we'd probably be all better off.
And underlying bias is a thing. We all have biases in our lives, and sometimes we just aren't aware of them.
Yeah.
We probably should be more aware.
I think maybe the smartest text we got all night long. Men marry women hoping they don't change. Women marry men hoping they do change. And like I said, love my wife, love my life, 32 years plus. Thanks, you guys, for being a part of our show tonight. We'll be back tomorrow. We appreciate it. I'm Spike O'Neill. That's Matt Butler. It's Cairo Nights. I hope you guys stay safe, and we'll see you tomorrow.